Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the regular board meeting of the Forest Practices Board to order. Welcome, everyone that's traveled for the meeting today. And before we get started, I'd like to have the board introduce themselves. I'm Peter Goldmark, Commissioner of Public Lands, and our new arrival over here, Dave, please.
Dave Pereira, General Public Member.
Good morning, Sherry Fox, representing the Independent Contract Logger.
Norm Schaaf, General Public Member.
Morning, everybody. Tom Murray, designee for Department of Ecology, Ted Sturgeon.
Hi, Anna Jackson, designee for Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Doug Stinson, General Public Member and Small Forest Landowner.
Brad Abey, Department of Agriculture.
Bill Little, I'm with the Timber Unions.
Carolyn Dobb, General Public Member.
Good morning, Dave Hagawara, General Public Member.
Thank you all. And then to our safety briefing, please. Patricia?
Good morning and welcome to the Natural Resources Building. In the event of a fire, alarms will sound and flash. Please leave this room using the double doors here, and DNR staff will lead you out to the grassy area along Jefferson Street. In the event of an earthquake, alarms may not sound and flash. Please drop to the floor and cover your head as best as you can or go under a table. Again, after the shaking has stopped, leave this room using the double doors here and head out to the grassy area. In the event of, along Jefferson Street, if there are any emergency medical needs, DNR employees are trained and equipped to assist you. At this time, I ask that you silence any noise-making devices. Thank you.
So I see we don't have two board members here yet. We are expecting them yet this morning, but I think we will we'll continue with the meeting as we are. We obviously have a quorum. So we have had the board introduce themselves. Other staff members that are here today.
Darren Kramer, Forest Practices Division Manager.
Bill Ferrister, Assistant Attorney General.
Mark Engel, Forest Practices Assistant Division Manager.
Trish Anderson, Rules Coordinator for the Forest Practices Board.
Jim Hotbed, Adaptive Management Administrator.
Julie Sandin, Assistant Division Manager for Practices Operations.
Lenny Young, Department Supervisor, DNR.
Bridget Moran, Deputy Supervisor, Wildlife and Human Services.
All right, thank you. And with that, I'd like to ask the public to introduce themselves, please, starting on my left.
Hi, Kathy Wisman, Barbie Mills.
Vic Musselman, Barbie Mills, and WFFA.
Chris Mendoza, Conservation.
Peter Goldman, Washington Forest Law Center.
Cara Whitaker, Washington Forest Law Center.
Tom Robinson, Washington State Association of Counties.
Adrian Miller, Washington Forest Protection Association.
Good morning, Kevin Godley, the Warehouser Company.
Larry McDonald, Small Forest Landowner, DNR.
Ken Miller, Washington Farm and Forestry Association.
Rick Dunning, Washington Farm and Forestry.
Paul Zimmer, DNR Forest Practice.
Jim Lynch, Westport Timber.
Scott Swanson, Westport Timber.
Arthur West,
a member of the public.
Jeff Davis, Department of Fish and Wildlife.
David Whipple, Forest Policy Coordinator, Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Ben Nelson, I'm with Senator Jim Hargrove's office.
Sherry Felix, Forest Practices Division. And Preston Robinson, Forest Practices Division.
All right, and thank you all. And during those introductions, we did have one additional board member join us.
And I'm Brent Barenberg, representing Department of Commerce.
And we understand that Mr. Summers will be here, but in just a little bit of time. So, again, we'll proceed on. Next item on this morning's agenda is approval of the minutes from the November 10 meeting. These minutes have been distributed to the board members. Comments on the minutes, additions, corrections, what's your pleasure?
I move the exception.
Okay, we have a motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion properly supported. Any discussion on the motion? Call for a vote. All those in favor, raise your hand. All right. Let the record note that's unanimous approval of the minutes as published. Thank you for that. Moving on to the next item then this morning is a report from the chair. That would be my report. Last meeting we intended to get this first piece of business done, but the recipient was not here. The recipient is here this morning. Bridget, would you come forward, please? So I think most of the board remembers that Bridget served in her former life as a member of the Forest Practice Board, and we want to give this plaque to you and as a token of our great appreciation for your service to the state and the Forest Practice Board. Thank you, Bridget. At the risk of stating the obvious, I will say that membership on this board is a heavy responsibility, takes a tremendous amount of time, effort, and work, and I believe that's the least that we can do to thank former members for their commitment of time and energy and expertise to this very important obligation. So my report over the last quarter of activities includes one committee that that I serve on along with Carolyn and also with Sherry, dealing with bylaws and making sure that this board is appropriately authorized and is organized in a way that's clear, where our practices and procedures are clear not only to board members but also to the public and others. We've held one very important meeting where we had discussions about this issue. I think it's clear that because of the importance of this board and the fact that much of its duties and process is rooted both in statute and in rule, this is a fairly complicated issue to resolve. And by resolve, I mean making sure that we have all rules and statutes appropriate so that we can carry forward the business of the board in a business-like fashion serving the public. We're not yet done with our work. And I want to thank our council for needed advice and guidance. I want to thank the committee members for their time they've already put into this effort. But I just want the public and the board to know that we are not yet done with our effort and that we will be convening again before our regular meeting in May, at which time we anticipate coming back with a full report. I think it's obvious from our work thus far that we need to do better in terms of informing the board about the root of our own authority and what practices and procedures there are in statute and in rule, and having a more organized format for understanding how these impact our activities. That will be one of our work products that we will bring back to you. There may be a few outstanding issues that we need to deal with which are not adequately covered in these existing authorizations, and I think that's the topic of our further discussions, and we will be reporting back to you in May, and I'm sure we will convene again, hopefully in the month of March, so that we can continue and hopefully complete our deliberations, come back to you with a work product. Along the way, it's become clear to this committee, and to me in particular, that we need to have more training so that the board clearly understands its existence and how its practices and procedures are already in rule so that we can carry forward our activities and our deliberations in the manner in which they are set forward currently. So we need to engage in training. The staff has contemplated a week training event And I have said that may be a little unrealistic. allow me to exaggerate just a moment to understand that there's some tension around just how much time I think, the difference between how much time they think may be required and how much time I think may be realistic for us to go through a training exercise. Needless to say, even for long-standing board members, I think training is important, but I think we all understand that for incoming board members who have not served on the board and have not had the benefit of training, I think it's going to be very important. So we'll be working with the board and with incoming board members to make sure they're adequately prepared for this responsibility. I see in my notes that, in fact, the staff is recommending, and I think this is with a little dialogue with the chair and others, that it may take a three-hour refresher course for existing board members every couple of years. And obviously, an incoming board member may be a little bit more than that. As the board may recall, and for it's important for the public to understand, there's been a committee of the board working on watershed analysis. We're going to have a report from that committee yet today. Just want to thank the members of the committee for their hard work. I know there have been, I believe, five meetings. This has been an important activity, and I want the members of the committee to know that I appreciate their time and effort to bring forward this recommendation to the board. I've made commitments in the past to try and help the small forest landowners with many of their issues having to do with the disproportionate impacts that they suffer from forest and fish. I've entered into dialogue with them both on an individual basis with some of their leadership. But we had a sort of a mini summit back in December, convened a number of small forest landowners together with state agency representatives and other interested parties. We've entered into a dialogue. I see Rick Dunning is here today. Rick, thank you for coming today. We are continuing to work on those issues with small forest landowners. I don't think we've reached any magic bullet yet about what we may do, but there are some avenues I think yet available to us in this legislative session where we can try to follow through on some of the commitments that the state has made in the past, and it's my intent to continue that dialogue and to work toward a resolution of at least some of those issues. Another major project that we've been engaged here at DNR is the development of a strategic plan to cover the next 5 years. This has not been done for some period of time in the agency. We've been engaged in this since September. It's drawing to a close. We've been having public meetings with our draft strategic plan. We were in Port Angeles last night, if my memory is correct, and I think that's the sixth of seven public meetings we've had around the state with our draft. This is all available on the web. If you have interest in this plan and want a printed copy, I think we can probably provide you with that. Needless to say, we feel this is a very important activity at DNR. We've been engaged with executive management. We've been engaged with the staff all the way down to the ground, so to speak, with multiple meetings across the state at the staff level and now with the public. It's been a highly interactive effort. We've had lots of input from the public. We've had lots of input from our staff. And again, if you're interested in providing some comment, that comment period is still open. I'm not sure exactly when the comment period will close, but it will run through this month at least. We hope to have a final copy of our strategic plan sometime in March or early April. I just want the board to know that staff of DNR have been very engaged in this process, and I deeply appreciate their hard work in generating a strategic plan that represents the best interests of both the agency and the state. last item is legislation that is making its way through the legislature up on the Hill. We all know we're roughly halfway through the legislative session, although I think my legislative liaison, Heath Packard, would know almost to the day, if not the hour, as to how far we are along. He's been working really hard on a number of issues. We're going to have somewhat of an update, I think, a little bit later on what some of those particular issues are. Suffice it to say that the major item on everyone's agenda today, this session, is the budget. And we know that we have somewhere around a $2.7 billion hole in the state's budget. We know that all state agencies will bear at least some of the brunt of these reductions. I think it's important for the board to know that DNR has already reduced its staff by somewhere over 250 paid positions, with somewhere in the neighborhood of 114 staff literally out the door. This is a result of three reductions in force that we've carried out over the past year. We're highly engaged with the legislature and with OFM during these discussions. We know we will suffer further reductions. We are trying to protect the core business functions of DNR so that we can continue to carry out the very important mission that we have for the state. It's a difficult time with the budget. I think it's hard for anyone, and I'll be plain here, it's hard for anyone outside the legislative process itself to fully understand the enormity of the state's budget dilemma. It's not going to get solved without a lot of pain. It's not going to get solved without a lot of, if I can put it mildly, discussions. Because reductions are painful, and targeting where those reductions are going to occur and in just what manner is a very difficult task for everyone, including managers of state agencies. So with that, I think I'll close my comments and ask our latest arriving board member to introduce himself.
Dave Summers from Snohomish County, representing Washington County. Right.
Thank you for joining us today.
I apologize for being late.
And then moving on to the next item on this morning's agenda is an opportunity for public comment. We have five members who have signed up. I want to remind everybody that in the interest of fairness and the interest of brevity, I ask everyone to keep their comments to 3 minutes, and Patricia will be over there keeping time. So with that, I'd like to invite our first comment from Arthur West. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, members of the Forest Practices Board. It's very nice to come and speak to you today. For some months I've been looking into the activities of the Forest Practices Board. I've been involved with the judiciary and the legislature. Representative Blake proposed a bill in this current session to try to clear up the involvement of the Washington State Association of Counties. He believed that was an unconstitutional law. I think so too. And I think I'm glad that you've talked about changing your bylaws and making this process a little more understandable to the public, because I think that the public isn't very well connected to this board. I think the laws that are currently in place regarding the composition of this board need to be revised. I think the processes of this board involving the Open Public Meetings Act, Open Public Records Act, and the way that it sets policy groups and retains private consultants also need to be reformed. The contract that you had for support services, the interagency agreement that you had for support services with the SAC, was terminated January 6th. This was an illegal contract with a private, well, semi-public organization. I'm glad that you managed to terminate that contract. You're no longer illegally spending money to support the activities of this board by the actions of a private organization that refuses to follow the Open Public Records Act. I hope that in the future, you will get some training in how to follow the laws and the constitutional provisions that apply to this board. As an Article 3 agency, the Department of Natural Resources and the Commissioner of Public Lands has to follow Article 3, Section 24, which specifically, in our state constitution, requires public records to be maintained at the seat of government. Now, that's a unique provision in our constitution that doesn't, I haven't seen in any other state constitution. That sort of, to my reading, in combination with the Open Public Meetings Act and the rest of the law, would prevent you from using private associates, private groups like Schwensen Associates, to guide policy groups. I don't know any other board or agency of the state that uses private organizations to facilitate meetings under the public records that are required to be open under the Open Public Meetings Act. I think that that whole process is flawed. The agreement that that comes from, the secret settlement agreement between the people that did the case in the federal court on the spot at all, that's a very, very strange and suspicious agreement. In fact, some of the people that were adversaries in court, as soon as the agreement was signed, became partners and entered into a partnership agreement. I think that's the Audubon Society and the Washington Forest Practices Association. So I'd say we need to look at the open process. We need to look at how this board functions. We need to bring it back into line with the law, the laws that are constitutional, and the requirements of open public procedure, and we need to very carefully look at the private organizations and private associations that have intermixed their activities with this board in a manner that is probably illegal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Rick Dunning.
Morning, Rick.
Good morning. Chairman Goldmark, members of the board, I had a really good joke for this morning, but I only have 2 minutes, so I got to...
You get three.
I'd like to... Well, first off, my name is Rick Dunning, and I'm speaking as a small forest landowner for the Washington Farm Forestry Association. I'd just like to bring the board up to speed on just the recent actions that we've been taking, as well as make 2 points of clarity. As you may know, we have legislated an answer to our issues with forest and fish. And our original bill failed, but Legislative Natural Resources Study Group still has it alive, and we're thankful that the Senate has heard our cry for help. 2 points of clarity I'd like to make are regarding collaboration with forest and fish policy and the prioritization of FREP. There are some who claim publicly that the WFFA is not collaborative. Yet we just see it different. We simply do not agree with the forest and fish groupthink. If not agreeing makes us uncollaborative, then we stand corrected. But we were told that forest and fish, that in forest and fish, an issue of one principle is also an issue of other principles. On January 8th at our executive committee hearing or meeting for the WFFA, we had the co-chairs of forest and fish policy come down to discuss these claims of our lack of collaboration. And when faced with pointed questions, they stated that forest and fish policy does not consider FREP its issue. It's our issue, not forest and fish policy. So we just believe it should be, and that's the point we're trying to make. And as to the prioritization of FREP, you're being told that FREP must be prioritized to fix a problem if we are to receive future FREP funding. And there again, we just do not agree. FREP could use some tightening up, as we attempted to do with our House bill in 2009. But FREP is not broken. The recent NUMSTEP and substantiated claim that $800,000 of FREP went to people who are not small forest landowners needs to be addressed. But this is only 4% of the $20 million that has been paid over 10 years. FREP is just a very expensive program. $19.2 million, or 96%, has successfully and rightfully purchased small forest landowner conservation easements. And we will continue to work to reform FREP, but prioritization of FREP will only pit one tree farmer against another. Lastly, I want to publicly thank Jim Peters and the tribes for Jim's recent testimony at one of our hearings. While other forest and fish principals speak against our efforts, Jim berated legislature for not funding FREP, and we could use more of that support. And when Jim implied that they considered tree farmers their brothers and sisters, we were honored. And we think that is the spirit of collaboration. So thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Ken Miller.
I'm just done for the joke.
There's still time for the joke.
Morning, Ken.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Ken Miller, a small family forest owner with 100 acres of younger forest land and about a half a mile of fish streams. And I'm also on the landowner, one of the landowner representatives on the DNR SFLO Advisory Committee. I'd like to try to shed some light on why most small landowners are feeling such high levels of overall frustration with the regulatory processes of forest and fish by describing in very general terms the process on one template that I and several others in this room have been involved in since 2003. Excuse me. We are working on it, but we still don't have a conifer restoration template for your consideration, despite three major efforts by all stakeholders. So far, we've created at least 40 to 50 drafts, requiring thousands of hours of work by all the stakeholders involved. This particular template is targeting only 15 to 20 FPAs per year, but was initially thought to be easily done because it could be patterned after most popular alternate plans being regularly approved by ID teams. In 2004, we got close, but in the end, the landowners concluded it just wasn't very workable. A couple of years later, Stephen Bernath volunteered the DOE to do a literature review and a modeling exercise to see if that would help resolve the remaining concerns. This partially completed publication still didn't resolve the issues and was tabled by policy, pending the results of other field studies. Studies that I now understand have been canceled for mostly budgetary reasons. The current effort required extensive field surveys. We found good and bad restorations and then restarted the template discussions. We resolved part of the earlier issues, but ironically, in other areas, our current draft is more restrictive than what we walked away from in 2004. Probably says a lot about amateur landowners trying to negotiate with trained professionals. A similar process was started in 2005 on the Eastside Forest Health template, where we had agreement within the SFLO Advisory Committee, but for a variety of reasons still couldn't get it to policy for their review. So my much smarter peers from the east side gave up after one failure, despite the potential for huge benefits to the landowners and public resources. The bottom line of my testimony today is that consensus is good. However, it seems that we are striving so hard for 100% consensus and zero risk before we bring anything to the board that we almost assure failure or at best much watered down or overly complex templates. We just simply can't sustain such huge efforts by all stakeholders for such low risk efforts to fulfill the promises of forest and fish. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question. Mr. Miller, I share your frustration. I have a question. You've been around this process for a long time. Do you have any solutions to how this could work better?
Well, as from a process standpoint, I understand. I'm real interested to hear some of the stuff about the spotted owl stuff, which I don't want to know anything about, but I understand they've got a little different process that they went through that may be something that might help us. Otherwise, you know, Rick alluded to some other aspects, but it just doesn't seem to work, or at least work very well on, especially if you've got any kind of a contentious issue. You know, you can't get it dealt with at the lower levels. It has to come. You know, I personally believe that we can get our stuff dealt with within forest and fish. I didn't believe that when I first started, but I believe there's enough language and stuff within forest and fish that we can actually get there. But it's going to take some fairly high level decision makers and the board here, I think, to get a little, perhaps a little bit more involved. Or the legislature, as Rick points out, you know, it's all very messy, and I don't have all the answers. But all right, I am interested in this spotted owl. I, how they dealt with the conflicts within the committee. So that may be a sign for us.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Kara Whitaker.
Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioner Goldmark and board members. My name is Kara Whitaker. I'm a staff scientist and policy analyst at the Washington Forest Law Center. Our firm co-represented the Seattle and Kittitas Audubon's societies in an Endangered Species Act take case against the state. The settlement of this case resulted in the formation of the Northern Spotted Owl Policy Working Group, whose recommendations you will hear later today. I attended these meetings over the past year in support of the Conservation Caucus members of the group. Audubon's Spotted Owl lawsuit was necessary because the forest practices rules allow landowners to cut all of the suitable habitat in owl circles outside of spotted owl special emphasis areas, also known as SOCEs, including the nest tree. Under these rules, more than 19,000 acres of owl habitat in these areas have been harvested statewide. Washington spotted owl populations continue to decline steeply at an average annual rate of 7% per year. This makes it likely that we will witness the extirpation of spotted owls from our state within our lifetimes. The parties who wrote the working group charter called for a balance of science and policy-based solutions, but unfortunately all three caucuses of the working group could not reach consensus with respect to the need for a current scientific analysis or rule changes. Throughout the negotiations, both the Government Caucus and the Conservation Caucus repeatedly stressed the importance of convening a technical science group to answer fundamental questions about the state of the owl on non-federal lands based on current data. Regrettably, the Forest Industry Caucus prevented consensus on this recommendation and also opposed strengthening the forest practices rules to protect owls outside of SOCEs. Maintaining the status quo in spotted owl state regulations, undervaluing the role of science, and depending solely on voluntary incentives simply will not stop or reverse the decline of the owl in our state. I urge you to convene a spotted owl technical science group and to provide interim regulatory protection for occupied owl habitat at risk of harvest. If need be, a petition for rulemaking can be made toward this end. Thank you.
Peter Goldman.
Good morning. Good morning, Commissioner, Board. I was expecting to use my general comment period to discuss watershed analysis, but I observed that the board is going to, the commissioner is allowing us to have a separate comment for watershed analysis. So I actually had a moment. I'm not going to use any of it to tell Rick's joke here. I hope it wasn't a lawyer or environmentalist joke. That's all I can say here. But I want to just talk about something that I've wanted to speak about for a long time. It's probably one of the most important words. In your constitution, which is the State Forest Practices Act, and it's the word viable. And I'm hoping that over the next few meetings and after the meetings, we can kind of start thinking about what does the word mean? Because it is one of the most important words in the Forest Practices Act, and it's not defined. It's actually for all of you to figure out what does viable mean. Does it mean viable for a large company? Does it mean viable for a small forest landowner? Does it mean short-term, long-term? Does it take into account domestic competition, international competition, the cost of the housing market, log prices? Every day, as you're going about implementing the forest practice rules, you have to think about, well, what are we to have to do to maintain a viable industry? And we all want to maintain a viable industry. We really do. So I think that it's really important to start thinking about what that word means. Now, I don't know your businesses, I'm speaking to the landowners here, as well as you do, and I admit. And I know that Mr. Stinson's trying to get me to invest in some forest land, and he said he'd throw the Brooklyn Bridge in with it, too. So I'm thinking about it, actually, there.
Very good.
But But what I'm emailing a study, it was very long, I've asked Ms. Anderson to email it to you, that was prepared by EcoTrust, which is a forestry landowner and manager in Portland and a think tank on forest, progressive forest issues. And last week, some folks from, including WFPA and I, went to a very interesting presentation at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on different on ecoforestry and what are the economics of ecoforestry. And what I was quite surprised and shocked to find that the numbers really are getting closer and closer and closer, that there's a different way of maintaining a viable forestry industry. We always hear about how in the short term cash is tight, log prices are down, everything's going to hell really quickly. But it's really important to take a moment and look at the period between 1975 and 2004. The return on venture capital was the highest, 17.9%. Real estate, 9.6%. The Standard & Poor's 500, 13.7%. U.S. Treasury, 6.2%. And U.S. Timberlands, 12.6%. With the lowest risk, one of the lowest risk ratios of all of those investments except for U.S. Treasuries. Actually, timber was a very good investment for 28 years, and you know it's not that it doesn't have short-term challenges. It absolutely does. I completely acknowledge a lot of the things that everyone says here, but the bottom line is that it has not been such a bad investment. The EcoTrust. If I could just say one. The EcoTrust slideshow, which I've distributed to you, proves that with the kinds of new forest methods, conservation easements, all the kinds of different things that we think we could bring to the table, we could improve the internal rate of return from 6% to 7% on forestry today. There are different ways to think about viability than just constantly impeding environmental protection. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so that completes our first opportunity for public comment.
Mr. Chair, I want to make a correction. The agenda does not have a public comment period for the watershed analysis agenda topic. The sign-up sheet was put out on the table by mistake.
Well,
so you may want to entertain.
So where would you propose that?
I would propose you do it now.
On if watershed analysis?
If there are folks that wanted to comment on watershed analysis, but we're reserving that for later in the agenda, I would suggest that they make those comments now.
Why can't we do that in the afternoon just prior to the watershed analysis report?
You could do that as well.
I think that would be my preference.
That's fine.
Okay. So we will have an opportunity for public comment on watershed analysis prior to the committee report. Moving on with our agenda, before we have staff reports, I think Darren has an introduction to make.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to formally introduce Jim Hotbed as the new Adaptive Management Administrator. Jim actually started in November, but was not on the November agenda. So I want to take this opportunity to formally introduce him. Jim comes to us from State Lands, most recently, where he was the manager of the research monitoring section for the State Lands ACP. So he brings a lot of relevant experience to the position, and we're very happy to have him.
All right. Thank you. And just as we get started with staff reports, I want to remind everybody on the board and the presenters that these reports are in your board packets. And it is the expectation that this just be a brief summary. Brief, 30 seconds, please. Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Surprisingly, I've never been associated with the regulatory part of the agency, but I think I probably know half of you at least prior experiences. So I'm glad to be here. My staff report was over projects that are soon to be hopefully completed.
We have 9 projects that are either in ISPR, will soon be going to ISPR, or have been, and we're now reviewing comments and revising the staff report. What I did was commented on 7 of those 9. So unless there's any questions.
Are there any questions for Jim? All right, thank you very much. And congratulations on adhering to the request. Second one is on compliance monitoring. Walt?
Morning, Walt. Good morning, Commissioner and board members. I'm Walt Obermeyer, the compliance monitoring program administrator. We completed these, you have your report. We have completed the fall sampling this year. There are total 175 applications that we reviewed. 96 of them are what we call the standard sample, whereas we look at all the features of that occur on any one application, all the forest practice activities that occur on any one application. Then we had 79 wetland emphasis samples where we looked particularly at those activities that surrounded wetland areas. So right now we're compiling that information and preparing it in the database for analysis for the report due later this year. So we've also been dealing with the clean water assurances that we received this October from the Department of Ecology and preparing the next year's work focus, which we will begin sampling again the first week of March.
And when can we expect that report, please?
I was going to say this fall.
And okay, so there's one from the previous year that was published this past fall, is that correct?
No, there was one from the previous biennium.
Okay, so it's a 2-year interval?
Right. I'm trying to shorten the time from the original publication, which occurred about a year and a half after the completion, to somewhere between 6 and 10 months after the sampling year. Yes.
I just wanted to thank you. Staff from DFW asked that we acknowledge how closely you've been working with them, and they've noticed a really large change, and just wanted to thank you for that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Rulemaking activity and the 2010 work plan. Mark? Morning, Mark.
Commissioner, members of the bar, Mark Engel. In your packet, you do have the rulemaking schedule, Gantt chart, and then the work plan. Today, you'll be presented Northern Spotted Owl rulemaking requests. I want to say that staff has also convened a stakeholder group to develop rulemaking language for the board to authorize and also a 30-day review at the August meeting for Riparian Open Space Program, which is on schedule. There is also potential from the legislature that we will have to add additional rulemakings to this schedule, probably more to come at the May meeting. In addition, as you heard, the conifer restoration template, in addition to Board Manual Section 21, is delayed, and we're hoping to bring that to the board at the May meeting for your review and approval. And also at the May meeting, we will bring forward the CEMER 2011 work plan and budget. Are there any questions?
All right. Thank you very much, Mark. And thank you for the schedule as laid out in your report. Small Forest Landowner Advisory Committee and Small Forest Landowner Office. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. I'm Mary McDonald. I'm with the Small Forest Landowner Office, and I'll do just a 3-second quick summary. The Small Forest Landowner Advisory Committee was appointed a new member, and that's Tammy Perot, and she's now on the Small Forest Landowner Committee. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. And the forest riparian easement program is, we completed 278 easements, and it's not funded this year, so we're moving forward on that one. They're going to have stewardship family forest field days in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, with conjunction with DNR in the spring. And the family forest fish passage program completed 29 fish passage projects this construction season, and they're slated to have 5 abandonments for this upcoming construction season. If there's any questions, I'll be happy to take them.
Mary, can you tell the board how many applications under the FRET program that are currently in file?
There's 81 currently, and what you're going to see is, you know, if you would have asked me a month and a half ago, it would have been 76. So those numbers of applications, we're still receiving applications that come in. So that's a number that is changing.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Thank you, Mary.
Thanks.
TFW Cultural Resources. Morning, Pete.
Good morning, Commissioner and members of the board, and I don't believe Jeffrey's here. But I'll just let you know that we are going to present our report quarterly to you simply in the form of our task list. And so hopefully you will be able to see what we're up to and the progress that we're making. Jeffrey and I met with Commissioner Goldmark and Dave Pereira to present the draft charter. And so we had, a very good meeting and discussion, and we'll await the board's decision on that. Thank you. Answering questions.
Questions for Pete? I think I would just enumerate that I appreciate Jeffrey and Pete's advocacy for this program, and that they have approached DNR about some funding to help them in their efforts. Very difficult time for funding questions to be answered in a positive way. I'm not sure they took that easily, but we would like to help, but we don't have the resources now. I think there needs to be one slight correction here in terms of terminology. Committee implies board membership. There is no board membership on this particular group. I think it might be appropriate to call it something more different, and I just encourage you to think about what that might be.
Yeah, we're very happy to work with staff and members of the board on moving forward with this notion. So anything that you can suggest, we're more than happy to accommodate the needs. And the funding issue, we fully understand the funding issue. It would help us, but we do understand that.
Yeah. And thank you for your continued service on this very important activity, Pete.
Thank you.
Taylor's Checker Spot Butterfly. David, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Sherry.
Good morning, Chair, members of the board. My name is Sherry Felix. I'm with the Forest Practices Division in the Policy and Services section.
Good morning. David Whipple, Forest Policy Coordinator for Michigan Valley.
2 years ago, in September, after working with a variety of stakeholders interested in protection for the state endangered species Taylor Checkerspot butterfly, we came to the board and the board approved a non-rule approach for forest practices protection of the species. DNR and Fish and Wildlife are to report annually to the board, so the report in your packet is our second annual report.
And I would like to just make one minor, well, pretty significant change, actually, that has recently occurred, and this is a change to the report that you have in your packets, and it I'd like to acknowledge Maryland Rain Company and let everybody know that we now have our first Taylor Checkerspot Butterfly Management Plan in place. It was signed just this morning, and we're happy to report that. So that is a change to the report, and you'll see that in the next annual report as well.
Questions from the board?
Hey,
yes,
Laura. Go ahead with the question.
On the down at the last bullet on page 4 up the top, DFW is learning that the remaining large forest landowners is selling. How will the department make sure that you know when that happens and at the earliest possible time have contact with a new owner?
We've been in contact with this particular landowner, although not recently, so we will be following up on that. Their particular, I don't actually recall where their particular parcel is in relation to the occupied site. I would characterize this particular parcel a lot like a lot of the other ones in that it's already been harvested and there's likely very little to no management that's expected up there. So I think the risk is low, but we will follow up with this particular company and see if we can get in that loop.
Other questions?
I'd just like to comment, if I could, and thanks to the Department of Fish and Wildlife's representatives that worked with us on this. It was a little bit of a long process, longer than we probably either one of us imagined, and they were probably at least as frustrated with us as we were with them at times. But we managed to work through it, and it was, I think, a good example of how a collaborative effort and a voluntary means of protecting resources can certainly work. And it really just boiled down to communicating each of our direct needs and issues and concerns, and being able to understand those that led to this agreement. We're very pleased to have gotten it completed, and again, thanks to the department.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you both. And that completes our staff reports. Moving on then to our legislative activity this current year. Darren?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Do you have a revised handout that I'm going to be speaking from? It's a one-pager rather than three. The reason for the revised handout is the one in your packet's about 2 weeks old or so, and things are moving pretty quickly across the street. And even the one that was given to you this morning is out of date. But not so much as the one in your packet. So I'll quickly go through the revised handout and update on a couple of the bills that I learned have changed since Monday. So starting from the top, substitute House Bill 2541, an act relating to maximizing ecosystem services provided by forestry through the promotion of the economic system of the industry. Significant provisions of this bill that affect the board directly. It requires the board to execute an MOU with the University of Washington Northwest Environmental Forum to establish an incentives panel to consider incentives that would address topics that the board would submit to the panel every couple of years. It looks forward about 4 years and attempts to predict the topics that the board may be entertaining in the way of rulemaking. The incentives panel is directed to attempt to establish non-regulatory incentives to address those topics that meet the objectives of the proposed rule topics. And then the board is directed to consider incentives developed by that panel or others that may address the objectives. The board is not compelled to do anything other than consider those incentives in its rulemaking deliberations. This bill was passed out of House Committee at the end of January. Substitute bill was referred to appropriations. Hearing took place, and that bill was passed out of committee last Friday. So that one's still alive as far as I know and moving. Substitute Senate Bill 6422 regarding land use hearing boards. This bill eliminates the Forest Practices Appeals Board and the Hydraulic Appeals Board and other state boards that conduct administrative review of environmental and land use decisions. The duties of these eliminated boards are transferred to other existing boards, in particular the Forest Practices Appeals would now go to the Pollution Control Hearings Board under this particular bill. It also establishes uniform timelines for filing appeals. Substitute bill was passed out of committee, the Senate committee, on February 4th, referred to rules, and I believe that one was passed out of that committee on last Friday as well. Next one down, substitute Senate Bill 6641. This is regarding forest applications leading to conversion. This amends the Forest Practices Act and CEPA to replace the lands platted after January 1st, 1960, and lands that are being converted reference with alternative language so that most small parcels that are 2.5 acres or less would now be classified as a Class 4 general and most parcels greater than that size would not. It also meant CEPA to use the same language. A substitute bill was passed out of committee on the 3rd and referred to rules. Going over to the backside, Senate Bill 6683. This is about sending renewal notices via electronic means. This bill requires all agencies to send, requires agencies to send all renewal notices to applicants by electronic means by July 1, 2012. We're assuming this would apply to us for the Forest Practices application. This bill was passed out of Senate Committee on the 5th and referred to Ways and Means. The update to your handout is that this bill was also passed out of Ways and Means yesterday, I believe, and referred to rules. Substitute Senate Bill 6448, providing DFW authority to approve permitting of hydraulic approval projects. It provides DFW the authority to streamline the HBA process and charge fees for processing and compliance of those permits. Establishes fees for low, medium, and high complexity projects. Adds the ability to DFW to issue civil penalties for individuals who fail to obtain a permit. It does exempt common forest practices from an HPA when those projects are conducted under an approved FPA and requires the board and DFW to jointly adopt rules necessary to implement the legislation and protect fish life. And those rules must be incorporated into our FPA. And then, of course, requires DFW to report to the legislature in 2012 about implementation of that legislation.
Darren, what's considered common forest practices?
I don't have the list in front of me. I'm sure Board Member Jackson probably has it in front of her.
You can pass this out too, but so the version that, and an update, you probably caught this too, Darren, is the current version did pass out of the Senate Ways and Means last night. So
yes.
I think it's going on the rules. But Section 10 of that bill has a number of activities. Beaver dams, timber felling and yarding, bridge repair, including painting, redecking, curbing, and railing repair, construction and repair of a ford, removal of woody debris, single lane forestry road water crossing structures on tide back waters. So it's a pretty extensive list, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife is not comfortable with that language as it is right now, and we've been talking to senators about trying to narrow that list just a little bit to what we had originally intended on with all the stakeholders. So that's the update on that. If, Sherry, if you want to look at the...
Sure.
Just on the back page.
So as was stated, that bill was passed out of Ways and Means yesterday, referred to rules. Senate Bill 6762, compliance with CEPA. This is an amendment to the CEPA that requires proposals that are closely related enough, in effect, to be a single course of action be evaluated in the same environmental document, and clarifies what constitutes cumulative effects, and that also needs to be discussed as part of an environmental document. This bill was passed out of Senate Committee and referred to rules on the 4th. House Bill 3132 eliminates the Columbia River Gorge Compact. This repeals the state's ratification of the Columbia River Gorge Compact with Oregon and the Forest Service, which established the Columbia River Gorge Commission. This bill passed out of committee on the 5th and was referred to rules yesterday. And then the bottom one, I'm not certain if this one is still alive, it may be dead, but the Senate Bill 6848 regarding forest practices applications establishes new fees for Class 2, 3, and 4 special FPAs, as well as for general. Last word I had on this is that it was referred to Senate Natural Resources on February 5th, but it may have not made it out of it. Wasn't able to determine that this morning.
But this one is probably budget related, so it has a little longer lifetime.
Right, right. That's all I have for you. Any questions? I'll give you a more comprehensive update in May. Just suffice to say, it's been very busy. We've looked at over 80 bills, done analysis on over 80 bills, and fiscal notes on over a dozen, and they're continuing to come in.
Is there any way that you could send us sort of an interim in a few weeks, you know, like this electronically?
Sure, I could do that.
So we can sort of keep up with it through you. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, I would request, too, in line with the early report on rulemaking, that if any of these do become passed, that will lead to some type of rulemaking, if we could be just informed of that. Obviously, we won't fit into schedule quite yet,
but at least we will know what
may be coming up.
Right. There's eight on this list that would involve rulemaking, so could be a busy year.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Next item is a fiscal year 2010 adaptive management program budget update. Jim?
Good morning again. I've been, I think, in this position now about 2 months, and the budget is complex. So I spent a good bit of time trying to figure out what it is. I understand somebody had a question about the budget at the November meeting, and I wasn't quite certain what the details of the question was, so I decided that I was going to give a presentation, fairly comprehensive, but at kind of the U2 level. So what I'm going to present is cover the fiscal year 10 budget, what we think about the fiscal year 11 budget, expenditures to date, because I think that was actually the question, expenditures to the board approved project in particular, and then some we'll talk a little bit about federal funding opportunities that have come up. So to start with fiscal year 10, we have projected revenues of $3.4 million, costs of $3.1 million, with carryover into fiscal year 11 projected at $241,000. And that's in the report. I should say that there should be a correction in my memorandum, third paragraph, bottom line. These projected savings add up to $96,000, should be $196,000. Going on, unless there's questions, I'll go on to fiscal year 11, because there's questions about fiscal year 11. Assuming that we get the supplemental budget in the governor's budget, revenues out to be $2.8 million. Costs ought to be in the neighborhood of $2.95 million for a carryover of a negative $108,000. Now, that, as I said in my report, the $108,000 doesn't bother me too much, because we do have approved parts of your budget that we can be flexible with, such as a contingency fund, the U.S. of ISPR, the independent scientific review panel. And we're also going through fiscal year 11 budgets currently in CMER and coming up with new estimates for costs of our projects for the year. And some of those are coming in at lower values than were projected last year. So quite frankly, at this time, I'm very comfortable that we can cover all current projects in fiscal year 11. Again, assuming that we get the supplemental. We won't be able to start any new projects unless some of our current projects finish early, or unless the budget exercises going on currently in CMER come up with substantially less projected cost than from last year. But I think the message is, hopefully we'll be good for fiscal year 11.
Jim, what's your supplemental budget request?
$1.3 million. In general fund, comes out of the LEA grant money, and a request to use, and there's different terms of art for this, but in the Forest and Fish account, we hold back $1 million as a contingency that we get bills in a rush, so we hold back money so that we can make sure that we pay invoices. That's $1 million, and what we would do is reduce that down to $200,000. For a period, so that we basically free up $800,000. It's called, officially it's called Official Unallotted or OFM Unallotted, but it is appropriated by the legislature. So it is money that's been appropriated, it just hasn't been internally allotted yet.
Zach?
Okay.
If I can add just a little detail here, OFM and the governor's office was very helpful during this process in terms of trying to find resources to come up with $2.5 million. So instead of using general fund money, they chose to use some of the balance out of our IDEA fund. I believe it's really about $1 million there, and close to $900,000 from the forest and fish account. And the remainder is to come from, hopefully, a grant that we're applying for through EPA around clean water. We really feel that forest practices and adaptive management have a strong connection with delivering clean water not only to municipalities but also to the Puget Sound, and that there's good logic behind making sure that adaptive management is successful in delivering clean water. So that sort of rounds out the $2.5 million. Just for the board's benefit, I would add that we're turning our attention now to the larger issue, and that is the permanent funding for the adaptive management program. We are in a good dialogue with our federal partners to hopefully come up with a more collaborative approach to research that engages their interests as well as ours on the broader landscape issues, as well as those needed to support the adaptive management program.
Was there good stakeholder support for the budget request?
There was, and it was pretty thoroughly vetted, and we're just working with the legislative bodies to make sure that they agree.
Okay, on to expenditures to date, and these expenditures are actually through January by virtue of the fact that this is the 10th and we get these numbers on the 8th. I was able to get them yesterday. So we've expended, in terms of the whole program, the adaptive management program, basically it's $2 million, $1.99 million to date through January. In terms of where that money was spent, $198,000 was spent on personal service contracts, and $1.7 million was spent on interagency agreements, goods and services, but interagency agreements. So basically, about 95% of expenditures today have gone to projects. And I calculated that if you look at salaries and benefits, plus what we pay the CEMER science staff, that that's approximately 13% of the budget today. In terms of board-approved project expenditures, you approved $1.6 million in May of last year for projects. We have in contracts for those projects $1.516 million. So basically they came in, the contracts came in at $78,000 less than what you approved. So there's a savings right there. Paid through January on those, we've paid already $710,000 towards the $1.5 million, leaving approximately $800,000 for the rest of the year to be spent on projects. In terms of federal money, the 0.5 that the commissioner talked about, currently there's a $4.5 million Puget Sound Scientific Studies Assistance Program. They expect to issue about 8 grants, about $200,000 to $700,000 each, with contract periods of 2 to 4 years. And these are intended to support the Puget Sound Partnership agenda, so basically they're for projects that in areas that drain into the Puget Sound. The Adaptive Management Program is submitting 3 applications. One application is being submitted by the Department of Ecology. They're working on developing that application and will submit it. It's basically the West Side Type N experimental buffer effectiveness monitoring in incompetent lithologies. We have a similar study being completed in hard rock. This is in soft rock. We have another study or application being submitted by CEMER staff in Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission. It's a wetland mitigation effectiveness study, also part of Clean Water Act assurances, commitments, and milestones that we have. And then we have a third one being submitted by DNR, but being developed by Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission staff, as opposed to the CEMER staff. And this is the CEMER Information Management System. So those are the three that were closest to having scoping documents, study plans, or pilots done that we felt comfortable we could get something put together and submitted within about a 4-week period. And so that ends my discussion, unless you have questions.
Questions?
Jim, on this sheet that was part of the packet that we have that lists all of the various studies, I'm looking at the gross estimate for 2011, and there are, it looks like half a dozen or so that the numbers are in red print.
Right.
And I take it that those are not part of the total?
Those are not part of the total. What those were projects intended to be started that you reviewed in May, didn't improve, of course, because they were fiscal year 11 projects, but were intended to be started in fiscal year 11. Those were taken out in order to see whether or not we could continue with our current projects. So you're right. Those are there, but they're not included in totals.
Okay.
Dollar totals.
And I see one of those looks like maybe it's the same thing as type N experimental buffer in incompetent lithologies right in the top group, the type N rule.
Correct.
So that would be one that if you receive this grant through the Puget Sound Partnership,
that could
be initiated.
Yes. I think
the wetland
mitigation. Yes, at the bottom, the very bottom red one is the same thing. So right. If we got these, well, say one of these or both of them, then we'd be able to start those two projects. Okay.
Other questions? Thank you very much. So let's take a 10-minute break at this time. We'll reconvene at 10:23.